Welcome to the Shred with Science podcast with your host, Dr. Chris Spearman, one of the world's leading online fitness coaches, an expert in metabolic correction and a global cover model. Chris delves deep into the most up-to-date scientific literature to provide you with the tools you need to live a healthy, enjoyable, and educated lifestyle.
What an incredible episode. It's the first episode of hopefully hundreds of interviews. When I say interviews, the guest that I'm speaking to here today, it's not about them. It's not about me. It's not about me telling you about their life. It's not about me telling you how great they are, or them vice versa. You know, to me, there's too many podcasts, in my opinion, where that happens. I've had a vision for a long time to take this podcast to a place that is something that would mentally stimulate me all of the time if I was a listener, but also educate me at the same time and allow me to, not to give answers, but to stimulate questions within the mind of the listener. And I think any deep, good, valuable conversation should do that. No two people should come into a conversation knowing all the answers or thinking that they do, in my opinion. I believe that a deep, meaningful, important conversation involves two knowledgeable people coming together, wanting to try and find at least a resolution and or broaden their horizons of knowledge, broaden their horizons of a topic. That's so rare. That's so rare that two people are humble enough. It's difficult, and some of the guests will find that challenging. I find that challenging at times to be open and receptive to other people's thoughts on a topic, health, performance, you know, be it in the gym, in the bedroom, in, you know, in work, wherever it is. We all want to try and perform to the best of our ability. And the goal of this podcast is to bring guests on. And I think every single episode is on the premise of we are trying to answer one question. And the question that myself and today's guest, Frank Den Blanken, are trying to answer is, what would be the best approach to nutrition, or the most optimal approach to nutrition, when looking to build muscle? We go deep. Frank is an incredible friend. He's got, I think, maybe tens of thousands of clients all over the world, predominantly in Holland. He has multiple businesses. I think he's got 14 businesses. He's an eight-figure, nearly nine-figure earner in terms of the fitness space, exceptionally well-educated in all aspects of life. He's a computer graduate in university and is a dear, dear friend. But his knowledge, and you'll listen to it on this podcast, impressed me hugely. I know him very, very well. We dug deep into a lot of scientific considerations around muscle building, nutrition around muscle building, various aspects of what actually constitutes building muscle, be it sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, hyperplasia, myofibrillar hypertrophy, etc. So if you are looking to build muscle in any way, shape, or form, you're going to absolutely love this. As always, connect with Frank. Scroll down below and you can get involved. Communicate with him. Lovely guy. Knows his stuff. Absolutely. But I'm so excited to start these episodes this way. Frank's a great friend. And I'm looking forward to some guests that I have already recorded and are due to be recorded over the next few days, next few weeks. And this is going to be exceptionally exciting for me. The goal is to have high-level, educated, honest, truthful conversations with individuals who do not feel like they're speaking on a podcast. The conversation that you hear just after this episode, is the same level of conversation and the same tone, the same manner, the same questions that I would ask Frank if we were sitting down having a coffee. And that's meaningful. I think that's an exceptionally interesting conversation. So I hope you guys enjoy it. If you don't, tell me. If you do, that's absolutely amazing. And I'm looking forward to giving you plenty more of these into the future. I think we're just going to get straight into it, dude.
That's fine with me.
Who better to ask? So I've got so many questions, and since we touched on doing this over the last few weeks, my mind's racing because I want to get a second opinion on some of the things that have been bugging me for the last few years. And I think it's fair to say that none of us know all the answers or whatever it may be. So
yeah.
I'm going to just throw some questions at you, see where you feel they land, and then let's see if we can strip that back and go a little deeper.
That's fine. So
are there perfect foods for muscle building, in your opinion?
I think the ones that are better than the other options, I think that's the case there. So like, if you're going to ask me like, okay, isn't vegan burger the same thing as a steak for muscle building? I will always disagree, because if you look at the amino acid profile, there will be a difference in those levels. So we both know that at the end of the day, like a contraction is based on some form of protein. There needs to be a certain threshold to be hit in order for it to grow. So I think there are better options. But it's not just one option. There are multiple options you can actually eat.
I think that's such a good way of addressing that, because we don't need to necessarily know the most optimal. We just need to know some that are more optimal than others.
Yeah.
And that will point us in the right direction. We'll touch on amino acids for sure, because I want to dig into that when we get there. I think to come back to, let's say, perfect food. So if we flip the coin, in your opinion, and on one side of the coin is more optimal foods for muscle building, and the other side was the quantity, calories, carbs, and proteins, depending on whatever you feel is optimal for you, and we'll touch on, say, sarcoplasmic or myofibrillar hypertrophy later on, the types of foods or the thermodynamics and quantities, if you had to choose, which should someone spend more time focusing on first, in your opinion?
I think type of foods. That's I think even though you can probably hit all the macros if you're really smart, I think in the end, to have to recover perfectly from your workouts, you need quality food. And if you don't take that in, it will probably be really hard.
So talk to me about quality foods, because as you mentioned, there are some that are more advantageous than others. Give us just a brief list, in your opinion, of the ones that you would say are an absolute must.
I'm
in Utrecht, and we're jumping into a supermarket, and I'm like, throw something in my basket. What are we going for?
So it will basically be the pro foods that most people know about, but even that level, it depends on the person. Like, for example, like you will, of course, you will have your chicken, your steak, your eggs, maybe some milk kind of products. I don't forgot the English name for that. So think about it as Scottish cheese, maybe something like that.
Yeah,
maybe
like
dairy products. That was the word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So those are pretty much complete amino acid profile for muscle building. So you'll probably look that. Like some whey protein solutions would probably fit in there as well. So some fish will probably be in there. So those options will probably be your best option. But then it's like, how does your stomach actually tolerate that food? Because it could be perfect on paper. Like, for example, let's take carbohydrates, for example. I can eat white rice. I can eat brown rice. I can eat quinoa. But if I eat pasta, I look 9 months pregnant. For some reason, I cannot digest pasta really well. So in your case, you could love it and you could eat it and it could work for you. So there's an individual difference in types of food you can actually eat.
Absolutely. I think something that is really important for us to dig a little deeper into is the misconception, in my opinion, is you are what you eat.
Yeah.
I think if we dig that a little deeper, you are what the bacteria in your gut do with what you eat, in a sense. And as you mentioned, a lot of, let's say, we don't even have to go as far as Crohn's or any of those to decipher optimal digestion. So a misconception I feel that we've all made when we started is that what you put in your mouth is going into your body. You don't know what's assimilated, and what's assimilated for one person is different to another. Are there then, and this may be cross, this could cross into, let's say, whey protein versus, let's say, actual food, because there's pros and cons to both.
Yeah.
How do you feel that sits with someone who's trying to build muscle, and what would you say to someone in that scenario? How do you look at both of those? Do you feel they're much the same? And there are differences, and are they significant in your opinion?
So there are differences, and I think they're not that significant. It's more like one thing that's really important, if you, like, let's say you want to become the biggest bodybuilder in the world, for example. Like, you should be able to get all your food down. That's one thing. But like, if you're starting out and you're like 175 pounds and you cannot get it in whole foods already, and you need to rely on shakes to get all your food down, you're never going to get to 250, because you don't have the eating habits to actually get there, because you need to eat way more calories to get there. So at some point I'm like, it can be additional, but like, you should be able to eat it from whole foods, but like, the supplements are what they are, a supplement to your nutrition. And when you're busy and when you don't have time to actually sit down and eat a meal, it's an easy solution to take, but it shouldn't be like a prime source of food. Like, if you're going to have dinner and you have time to cook, like, I'm, in my opinion, a chicken or a steak will always be a better option than a whey protein for digestion reasons.
Yeah. Well, are there any aspects of that you're, let's say, uncertain about, or that you, any questions around, let's say, be it protein, be it steak, chicken, whey protein isolate, calories, macros, from a macro perspective or a broad perspective that you've always kind of questioned or are unsure of? Anything that you're still maybe on the fence with?
No, I think that's pretty, I think the research is so advanced right now that I think that's pretty clear that as long as the macros are equal, it doesn't really matter if you eat a steak or a chicken or whey protein. That doesn't really matter that much. I think then it will more go to like your gut bacteria and how they respond to it instead of the macros.
I think that there's a lot of value in, for example, what one person, so let's just say you've two identical individuals in theory that eat the same foods. Me, for example, as you mentioned, I've got the stomach of a 4-year-old girl. I struggle with food. So it doesn't matter what types of food you give me if they're optimal, because if I can't fit it in, then it's no good, right? So is there anything you think can prepare someone, let's say, who is used to not eating a large volume? Is that just a waiting game? Or are there things that you would suggest people do, as crazy as that sounds?
So actually, I can tell you a personal story. Like when I was bulking up, I started at like 72 kilos. I'm right now about 115.
You were 72 when you started?
Yeah. So I've gained about 40 kilos. So, but I got a big appetite now. I can eat a lot. But it didn't always was like that. I remember at one point, I was, I think, about 85 to 90 kilos in that range. And my goal was like, I want to go to 100 kilos at least. So I need to bulk up. And I was actually working in the gym as a trainer. And at some point, like, I was thinking, okay, I can only eat clean foods. I cannot have anything fun. Like, it needs to be clean. Otherwise, I would just get fat. I need quality muscle. So those are the, I don't agree with that anymore. But at that point, I did. So I was eating, like, plain chicken and rice, maybe some vegetables, but, like, plain. So no seasoning on top, no sauce on the side. Like, it's dry food. Like, try to get that down. Like, I think I ate portions of, like, 200 grams of chicken with, like, 400 grams of rice. Plain, like, that's tough to digest. So I was having one of my breaks as a trainer, and our trainer room was next to the spin classes. So I was noticing at one point, I was literally eating on the music of the spin class just to get it down, because it was so hard. So you gotta start, you start using tricks. So that's one thing I did. I didn't eat from plates anymore. I started eating out of containers because they were bigger. So it was easier. So my spoon got bigger by the year. Like, literally bigger.
It's funny, because when you're dieting, you do the reverse.
So actually, same thing. Like, I was watching YouTube videos on my phone while I was eating, just to distract myself from not looking at the food and actually get it in your down. So basically, the reverse thing you would do when you try to lose weight, when you're trying to add muscle, and you need to go in such surplus levels that you actually need to do that, you're going to reverse all those hacks, basically, just to get it in.
So you used a phrase that's interests me a lot, lean tissue. And it's a word that it's a phrase that I use all the time. Now, what, and I don't know what you mean when you say it, but I'm going to tell you what I used to mean and doesn't really make sense. So I have to kind of be careful with how I phrase that, right? So let's just say you have, a lean piece of beef.
Yeah.
So to me, that would be a cut of beef that is low in fat, right?
Yeah.
When we say lean tissue, we mean building muscle without an excess of fat.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the misconception is that, let's say, the muscle that I build on my chest isn't actually entwined with as much fat deposits as we think, and rough, and instead it's, let's say, a dirty bulk with, let's say, a higher body fat percentage that has nothing to do with the muscle? Or do you believe that, and I know this will touch into sarcoplasmic hypertrophy potentially when we're looking at the difference in muscle that's, let's say, highly saturated in glycogen.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's a way to mitigate that? And how would you articulate lean muscle, putting on lean muscle to someone who's just starting out? So it goes without saying, if you're listening to this, you're interested in building muscle. I'm jumping in real quick to let you know that there is a free hypertrophy guide in the bio, in the description of this episode. I'm not here to sell you anything. I'm here to give you as much free information as possible. Down below, go to covermodelhypertrophy.com, click the link, download our guide, have a look at some of the videos. You'll go through maybe a 10-part video series over the next week or so that will help you, or at least give you some of the main considerations that are involved in building muscle. Down below, click the link or go to covermodelhypertrophy.com.
I think there's a difference in age in this regard. So for a young, like, especially when somebody's young and their testosterone levels are better, their glucose levels are better, they can tolerate a lot more calories than, let's say, somebody who's 40 years plus. If they were to go on the same 30 bulk, like, the results will be drastically different. So I think for somebody who's young, let's say minus 21, something like that, between 14 and 21, they can actually go on a dirty bulk. And I don't think, like, unless you don't have the great genetics, but if you have decent to good genetics, you can get away with a dirty bulk and actually pack on a lot more size than somebody who tries like the lean bulk, like the clean version.
Do you think testosterone is one of the biggest drivers in that balance?
Yeah, your baseline, I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is something that we speak about, you know, quite frequently, of course. And let's say people who are on TRT or testosterone rehabilitation therapy. Well, let me ask you this. Can a natural athlete, when I say athlete, I mean, say, someone who wants to look like a fitness model. Yeah. And I don't mean us in our 20s. I mean, 40, 50-year-old man. Let's say, as we know, you know, testosterone drops, 1.8, 1.9% every year after the age of 35. Do they stand a chance, a 45, 50-year-old man with low testosterone, lower than normal, versus an individual who is incredible, like on the high end of normal, or maybe someone who is on TRT and is still maybe on the upper echelons of testosterone, although obviously exogenous testosterone, still relatively close to normal range.
Yeah.
Do they stand a chance, in your opinion? Someone with very poor testosterone.
You mean on stage in a competition?
I just mean in life. I mean mental performance, physical performance, sexual performance.
Not business. Even close.
Yeah,
not even close.
I couldn't agree more. Like, talk to me about that, because I don't think people realize the other aspects of life that suffer when you've got poor testosterone poor testosterone.
So the biggest primary health marker for longevity is actually muscle mass that you have in your body.
Right.
So when your testosterone level is lower, your muscle mass is going to decrease. at some point. Let's say in the worst case scenario, you're going to have a version of cancer. Let's say you get colon cancer, for example. The timetable that you're going to live basically depends on how much muscle mass you have. Do you have a higher testosterone rate? Your chances of living longer than somebody who doesn't are exponentially different.
For sure.
So I think there's a big difference for that. But let's say for mental performance, let's say you have an entrepreneur that wants to focus. Like if you have a high testosterone rate, your neurotransmitters will function better. Mm-hmm. You actually have more amino acids. So also your connective functions are actually performing way better than somebody with a low testosterone. Like there is enough research about that, that if somebody has higher testosterone, their focus and their alertness is just way better.
Do you feel like TRT is a realistic conversation that should happen, and not just for us as coaches or just men in general? And obviously this is a strong point for us because there's quite a large number of people that I think get a very poor misconception of testosterone rehabilitation therapy or, you know, steroids or whatever that looks like when, you know, obviously, you know, our background is helping change people's lives. Obviously mine and you speaking about cancer research, one of the main, say, cancer drugs or even AIDS drugs is just happens to be what bodybuilders have manipulated, of course, incorrectly, and, you know, really take the biscuit. But let's just bring it right back to health. If our goal is to live an optimal, healthy life as a man into our 30s, 40s, 50s, and even 60s, should that be a conversation that happens? And how would someone go about that?
In my opinion, it should be something like that. If you don't feel like you get the most out of your life, you should be able to go to a healthcare person, like a doctor or something like that, and tell them like, okay, this is what's going on. I don't feel like I want to feel. They do some blood tests and they will literally tell you, okay, these are results. There are some options to improve this one, and this one, and this will be the result of that.
It's like in the Netherlands.
I think there's one doctor in the entire country that actually helps people with TRT.
Yeah, so obviously
it's like on the super low level.
Right. In Ireland, it's not even a thing. And in the UK, here's I know this goes into, say, political differences between countries, but I think when it comes to, let's say, a country like the UK, where the NHS is obviously government funded, it's, as you can imagine, maybe a little bit more tightly regulated than the US, where you can just go into a clinic and, you know, it's significantly, well, it's mostly private, right? So, it's such a common conversation that happens when, well, actually, you know what? It is, but it's actually an even bigger conversation that doesn't happen, but should.
Yeah.
What would you say the first steps should be? And I suppose getting your testosterone tested is important. Yeah. And not only that, looking at, say, you know, sex hormone binding globulin and free testosterone and various different health markers, but the benefit to, as you mentioned, improving synaptic diversity, improving neurotransmitter movement. I'm sure there's plenty more cognitive functions that are improved significantly. I'm sure, you know, I know you mentioned before you've done a lot of research on that.
Like if, for example, your neurotransmitters get better, your acetylcholine will rise, like your alertness and focus will be so much better. Like it will be the same. Let's say you open up a book and you start reading pages. With low testosterone, it will be hard to like focus for 30 minutes. Somebody with a high level of acetylcholine will probably read for 90 minutes without getting distracted. Like that's the big difference.
And without the need of an SSRI or an ADH or, you know, like Adderall or something like that. Like this is literally the power that natural testosterone has. So let's revert back then, let's say to training, nutrition, because there are optimal foods for natural endogenous testosterone, or at least allowing yourself to optimize the potential testosterone that you can produce yourself, and maybe marry that with a style of training.
Yeah.
In your opinion, based on, say, literature and helping literally tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people, No, I'm just going to go straight in. What should they do, in your opinion? Like, from what you've seen in practice, literature, what do you think will give them the biggest return on their investment for allowing, let's say, the most optimal testosterone longevity over time, naturally?
So I think the biggest thing they need to focus on is sleep first. Mm-hmm. Like, if your sleep levels are, like, if you don't sleep enough hours, your testosterone level will drop like crazy. Then it's a lot of stress management. So with nutrition, it could be a little bit of stress. Like, today I had a client that basically said, like, I'm thinking the whole day about nutrition. It shouldn't be like that. Like, if at some point you basically have assigned like a set diet plan that you're going to follow, maybe with some two or three variations, but it shouldn't be more like that. So it should be easy going. And when you set that up and you have like enough, like, I would, the thing that I always do is like, you take your protein amount and then you have a set number of protein that you need to hit each meal to get a leucine threshold. Leucine is the primary amino acid that actually builds muscle. So that's around 0.3 grams per kilograms of body weight. Mm-hmm. So let's say you're 80 kilograms. So that means 21 grams. So, and if you're 80 kilograms, like times zero, that's 160. So that will basically mean you need at least to hit 21 grams each meal. So let's say you're going to do 30 and you're, so now it's possible 60. Yeah, so it's 160. So that means you need at least 5 meals a day, right, at 30 grams of protein. So that's the first thing you set up. Then I was like, okay, then you want to look at, okay, what timing do I do with my nutrition? When do I'm going to train or not? And then depends on how long actually is your training. Like, do you have a training that's more than 90 minutes? Your carbohydrate intake will be different than a training that's maybe 45 minutes, depending on your schedule.
Increasing oxidative stress or preventing your ability to recover. You touched on, you know, when we're looking at leucine. So the best analogy there is, if we're trying to knock down a door, and as you mentioned, one of the first things you said is the quality of protein in terms of a diverse amino acid profile. Now that's essential, but that means nothing if muscle protein synthesis is not initiated with leucine, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, was it a Brad Schoenfeld or a Dr. Jacob Wilson study? I'm sure you've
I think Brad Schoenfeld did the one.
Right. And I think it was what, 3.1 to 3.5 grams of leucine to maximize MPS or muscle protein synthesis. Now that's all well and good, but we can't just be having leucine without complete protein. So
yeah.
And I think that massively proves the point that we do need a complete amino acid profile, because without that, we're not maximizing the ability to recover or grow. Do you find sometimes, especially maybe this is for another conversation, but let's say people who are restrictive in the foods that they will eat, vegans, vegetarians and such, it's only logical that if you put a restriction on anything that you are going to make it a little bit more challenging. That doesn't mean it can't be done, but how significant do you think that would be?
I think it's pretty hard. Like, if you, let's say you're going to do a vegan lifestyle and you're not going to take any supplements at all, I think it's almost impossible to get the same results as somebody who actually eats like all foods. Like, it's going to be so much difference. Like, if you're going to take supplements and actually fill in the things that you're actually missing out on, I think the results can pretty much be the same if you do it really smart. But then the question is, do you actually know what you're missing out on? Like, that becomes very hard to determine. Like, there are some obvious ones. Okay, I need to take leucine and this. But there are so many things you could be missing out on. You will make it very hard for yourself. So, it sounds like I'm not a fan of vegan. The fact is, I'm not. But if you do it, like, for the reasons, like, okay, I don't want to hurt any animals, I totally get you. If you do it for health reasons, I think there are better options than that.
For sure. I think it's always a challenge, I think, when you try and restrict various aspects of anything, like food, even certain carbohydrates or even foods in general. I think things become a little bit more restrictive. We touched on different aspects of hypertrophy. So I'm just going to outline something,
maybe just before we go into it. So there are two main types of, well, actually, let's come back a little further. So when we say that we want to build muscle, So the thing that I think we need to be very clear on is if I'm holding 10 balloons in my hand and I'm walking down the street and I'm holding them like the guy from It with 10 red balloons. Okay.
Yeah.
If I want to, and let's just imagine the mass of the balloons is my bicep. Now, if I said to someone, I want to increase the size of my bicep, most people don't know whether that means, do each of the 10 balloons get a little bigger or do we go from 10 to 15 balloons? And I think we need to address that first. So 10 to 15 balloons is hyperplasia, which is extremely difficult, if not almost impossible, without exogenous testosterone or in a fetal stage in early embryonic development, which therefore means when we say we want to build our bicep, it's the cells that we're increasing in terms of size. And so that's the difference between hyperplasia and hypertrophy. So Now when we go into hypertrophy, there are two main phases, but there's also a third. So we have myofibrillar hypertrophy, sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, and actually connective tissue hypertrophy, which is the increase of, say, connective tissue inside. So let's just say we're now saying that we're increasing the size of each of the 10 balloons.
Yeah.
And when we're increasing the size of the balloon, if we're increasing through myofibrillar hypertrophy, that essentially means that, let's just imagine that the red balloon is full of stuff and then water. We're increasing the size of the stuff, which is therefore increasing the size of the balloon. Sarcoplasmic is we're increasing the glycogen and sarcoplasm and the sarcoplasm, of course, the endoplasmic reticulum, basically the cell organelles within that. So, and then thirdly, the connective tissue within it. So we're just going to touch on myofibrillar and sarcoplasmic in particular, because they're very different and very different styles of training and have different effects potentially based on nutrition.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask Frank this and see, dude, I want to get your opinion. So if I want to increase the size of my bicep, I increase the size of each cell. I either increase the cell volumization through sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, or I generally put more stress, significant stress, and generally increase the tension to improve the mechanisms or the machinery within the cells. Which do you feel, simply, will give you a quicker return on your investment of time for unit volume of muscle cell?
So,
or is that's a very difficult question, I know, but I'm sure
I'll give some context, because I think the level of how well somebody is trained makes a big difference on this. If you're just starting out, I think myofibrillar hypertrophy would probably be the best one to go to.
Why that's the case.
Like, because there's the most bang for your buck straight away, I think.
Right.
Because, like, if you start looking at the first time you're going to the gym, and let's say you're going to do barbells. You take the bar, you're shaking all over the place. You're basically, everything you do is going to hit all versions that we just talked about.
Right.
But then, like, what's the first thing that's going to improve when the shaking stops? It's your strength levels. They're going to go up. And that basically means more tension. So the mechanical tension is, I think, mostly linked to myofibrillar hypertrophy. And that's actually it. It's like, if I were going to term, like, you have three levels of how you can actually build muscle. So one is my mechanical tension, second one is metabolic stress, and then third one is muscle damage.
Mm-hmm.
But in the research, Brad Schoenfeld actually talks about that mechanical tension is basically the king of all three. Mm-hmm. So if I make a program, what I'm basically doing, like, two-thirds of your program is based around mechanical tension and about a sixth on metabolic stress, and the other sixth is about muscle damage. So
simply put, for anyone listening, and even so I can clear it in my mind, if you were to completely polarize a bodybuilder and a strength athlete, that is the stereotypical difference, you would think, generally, as stereotypical as we can get, between myofibrillar, which is, as you mentioned, an extreme load or tension that forces muscles to adapt the cell machinery, versus cell volumization of, let's say, increasing carbs, cell volumization, shuttling water into the muscle cell, saturated glycogen stores, an enormous amount of electrolytes, and we could touch on creatine as well, to literally just, and the best analogy I use there is a tire pump for a bicycle. Every time you go to the gym, you're just pumping it up that little bit more. And
it's and that's something like for a beginner, like you'll get pretty much both because your strength and endurance is pretty low. But at some point, you're going to get more advanced and your volume that you're basically doing in the gym will go up tremendously compared to the first time when you went to the gym.
So here's something that's really interesting, I think, that we touch on because we're right on that vein. Very often people will say it's impossible to build muscle and lose body fat at the same time. This is the perfect scenario where we can actually achieve that by, let's say you start going to the gym or you're getting back into it, because that cell volumization, let's say the carbs that you're eating are being shuttled to the right places. You've got glycogen saturation. And for every gram of glycogen, you've got between 2.9 and 3.2 grams of water going into the cell. So you have this cell volumization approach, but that doesn't mean necessarily you're in a, you don't need necessarily to be in a massive surplus.
You can be in a small deficit and still get that.
Because you're being efficient with your macronutrients, right?
Yeah. So then like the quality is super important because you should be able to use that during your workout.
Right.
Like if you make a big mistake with timing, then timing becomes important. Let's say you eat all your carbs in the morning and you're going to train late at night. I think that will make a big difference if you actually can use those. Like if you do the timing then correctly around your workout, more of your carbohydrates, you're going to get better results.
Do you feel that, and we spoke about testosterone in general, we can touch on endogenous or exogenous, but let's just say in general, which of the two forms of hypertrophy, in your opinion, and based on the literature and what you've seen with your own students, is impacted significantly or more than the other when it comes to an increased level of testosterone?
I think sarcoplasmic, because as soon as the lactate builds up, like everybody remembers the feeling, let's say you do leg extensions and your quads start burning like hell. Like the research basically showed that your testosterone and your growth hormone shoot up like crazy when you hit that point. So that's basically like myofibrillar hypertrophy will be probably on the lower end range where you lift very heavy. You don't get that insane burn. Like you don't get that set. Let's say you do a set of 8 hard reps on squat. You don't get that same burn as like when you do a higher volume on a leg press or a leg extension. So I think there your testosterone level will shoot up a bit more and you actually use that more.
A lot of that from what I've noticed at least is when you train, let's say on both ends of that spectrum, the vast majority of the time, and I don't think it'd be overstated how important recovery is. One of the first things you said, rest, sleep, recovery, when it comes to muscle building. There's a big difference between training, let's say strength training, focusing on myofibrillar hypertrophy, which generally impacts your central nervous system, which is actually very difficult to bypass, versus training, let's say a lighter weight, higher volume, increasing your carbs, maybe having a good level of testosterone, natural or otherwise, and shuttling carbohydrates into the muscle where you can maybe localize your training a little bit more. And so you don't necessarily need to recover because you can switch between upper, lower, push-pull legs or whatever it may be. Have you found, and I suppose that answers the question really, that if you have a student or let's say an intermediate student or a man in his 30s, 40s, 50s, who has gone to the gym quite frequently, maybe needs to improve form a little bit, but generally speaking, the misconception out there is, well, I think one of the biggest mistakes is the nutrition around training and maybe post-workout or intra-workout or maybe pre-workout carbohydrates. And what we've noticed, at least, and the literature has shown, that the implementation and integration of carbohydrates around the workout perimeter has actually been one of the easiest ways I've found to help and manipulate someone's body composition. And a lot of people are missing out on that because they're removing, say, at least simple sugars or high glycemic index carbohydrates from around that workout period. And it's mind-boggling to see people's reaction when you say, hey, why don't you just, you know, slam down some Cocoa Pops or whatever it may be. How has that been for you over the last decade, when I know it's a fad, but there's a lot of science, but like it's purely based on science.
Yeah.
How does that conversation go with someone who's like, what, can I eat all of this? Like, and build muscle and still get leaner? How does that conversation go for you normally?
It's a tough conversation because they're so used to like a certain way. They're like, no, I cannot eat that. I'll get fat of that. Like, that's the first thing they think about. And then you basically need to lay down the science, how it actually works. So I always explain to them, okay, why do you think you cannot fully contract your bicep anymore during a bicep exercise? Like, you're going to run out of ATP. That's like the primary energy system that basically determines if you can do that. So to get ATP, it comes from ADP plus creatine phosphate. Mm-hmm. So creatine phosphate is basically, that's where creatine comes from for people that actually know the supplement. So you have basically bigger storage. So that's for like short duration activities, like 8 to 10 seconds. When you go to the longer version, like let's say 30 to 60 seconds, you're going to have more glycolysis. And that's basically carbs. But then there are some different forms of carbs. You have simple carbs and you have complex carbs. Like, simple carbs are just sugary products. So there's your Choco Pops, which you actually can eat. Because at that point, like when you're working out, let's say you start taking your Choco Pops after your first exercise. During your fifth exercise, they will be functioning to actually help you do more reps. So they're actually useful. So I look at nutrition as, there are always situations where they can help, where they actually work for you, and there are situations where they can work against you. And this determines when you take them and in which amount.
Do you have Lucky Charms in the Netherlands?
No, we don't.
What? So, Cocoa Pops, is that what you use?
No, we Haribo gummy bears, like the small.
And they're handy because you can put them in your gym bag, right?
Yeah,
between your gym bag. So you mentioned creatine and that mechanism of action between ADP being ATP being dephosphorylated and then you obviously release of energy and then coming back around again with our phosphate stores. That's obviously significant when it comes to and for sure. Potentially more significant when it, well, actually, I don't know the answer to this. Give me your opinion, right? So a part of me and some mentors of ours who, I mean, we don't have to not name them, but he's even left my head right now, but you'll know who I'm thinking about when I say it. Overloading with creatine to increase cell volumization. Who am I thinking about? Eastern European guy.
Kofilov?
No, you're going to kill me when.
Milos.
Yes, Milos Arshev. Yeah. So obviously he'll, an enormous amount of creatine to improve the cell volumization. And of course, with a higher level of testosterone, we'll focus on sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. However, having an abundance of, say, creatine phosphate stores will allow an exceptionally strong, vigorous, explosive burst of energy with myofibrillar hypertrophy. Do you have an opinion on which of those you think are more affected by
I can actually tell you a funny story about that.
Yeah, I do.
When I worked in the gym and there was a new trainer coming in, and he used to be going to the Olympics. He used to do in bobsleigh, like the...
Yeah.
Bobsleigh, I think it's called in English.
Most of those are ex-sprinters, right?
Yeah, so they're super fast and super explosive. And he got trained in Eastern Germany. So he was like, he saw me like making my foods and supplements for working out. And I was like, yeah, we did a protocol and it was like 25 grams of creatine a day for like for 3 months.
His suggestion.
Like, right. He said, we did that in Eastern Germany.
25 grams of monohydrate.
Yeah.
Right, guys, take note. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. What else?
So he's like, you should try that. Like, you will get insanely strong. And I'm like, why not? Like, there's 300 grams in my tub. Yeah, it will go quick, but it's not expensive. Let me just try it. Why not? Like, it cannot hurt me, really, I thought. So I took that. I literally did it for like 3 months. I took 25 grams of creatine a day. And I will say, like, the first 5 days, you don't feel empty. And then after that, I was working out, and the pump became so hard that I actually couldn't finish my reps.
Right. It's because it was just massive cell volumization. Yeah, so, and potentially lactic acid buildup.
Yes, yeah, so, like, the lactic acid buildup was so insane. That was like, it's actually hurting my performance because I got too much.
Right.
So.
And that makes perfect sense, though.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. What other supplements would you say? Now, this can be supplements. It can be ensuring that your vitamins and minerals are, certain vitamins and minerals are on point, or any additions that you would add, let's say a supplemental protocol as a must outside of, let's say, ensuring that your macronutrients are on point. If we're talking about extra supplements that you feel are essential for someone out there who really wants to not build muscle for the sake of building muscle to gain confidence, dominance, and be more assertive in all areas of life.
It will have phases, and it's depending on the phase that you actually do when training. Like, let's say you have a lactic phase where you actually really go for that burn. You want to have some saccharomatic hypertrophy. I think beta amylase is something really smart you actually take in smart doses. You don't want to have the jitters and the tickling, then you actually take too much. You want to stay within that. Like, most pre-workouts do way too much of that. So that's one. I use caffeine at certain levels. Like, I think microdosing caffeine can be super beneficial for training. You shouldn't be taking it daily.
Would you take that like in a tablet or a powder form, or will you just have coffee?
I will just take the coffee.
Yeah.
I think that's easier and more practical.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Is there anything else in terms of recovery that you think is really important for hypertrophy?
I think omega-3s work really well. Like, especially if you go into an oxidative stress phase, and you have a lot of oxidative stress, I think that will do wonders. Yeah.
Will you space those throughout your meals with lower carbohydrate meals, or how will you do that?
So I do them in the morning, and I basically have a high protein, high fat breakfast.
Yep.
And then at night. So those are the two, because it also improves your sleep.
Do you remove carbohydrates from you train early? What time do you normally train?
Around noon.
Yeah, that makes sense. And will you localize a lot of your carbohydrates around, say, pre-intra-post?
I think about 60% of my daily intake around my workouts.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Because also, I think we need to be very aware, and I've made this mistake before, it's all well and good to supplement to improve muscle mass or performance.
Yeah.
But when recovery is one of the most important things, this is going to sound crazy, dude, but one of the supplements that had probably the biggest impact on my ability to build muscle was, I've got two, but I would say melatonin and 5-HTP.
Yeah.
You know me, you know, not sleeping is my worst enemy.
Yeah.
So forcing myself to actually rest and recover and recoup and that's outside the box, because you wouldn't normally think that, and we should, and you know, recovery being a massive element of that. Do you have certain regimes that you feel that work for you? Let's say things that are optimal for hypertrophy, or do you feel there are things that we can do that will, say, optimize progression because of the psyche that we're doing? So for example, there is of course a placebo effect in supplements and training and various bits and pieces. How do you decipher that, and do you feel it even matters provided the person's bought into what they're doing?
Yeah, so what I personally noticed, like, I had my supplements stack at home. It was like, okay, this is the best thing I can do, this will work. But then I was traveling a lot, and a lot of places were like, maybe not the smartest idea to take all these supplements with me. It weighs a lot, and I don't know what certain countries think about certain supplements. So I don't take them with me. And I noticed, like, my training session didn't really hurt that bad. So I was like, maybe it's just a placebo effect. Like, I don't have them. I think the biggest influence actually on my training is just regular water. Did I drink enough before working out? Because that's something that would decrease my performance a lot. But like, I noticed some benefits for supplements, but that determines on the person as well. Like, I got a lot of good coaching programs with a lot of people in there. And I always say to people, like, get a notebook and just take one supplement at a time and just write down for a week. Do you actually feel a difference or not? If you don't feel it, like, you could be like a non-responder to a supplement. Some people are a hyper-responder. Like, I had a guy once in one of my bulking programs who took creatine and he gained like 3.5 kilos in the first month. And I was like, that's impossible. But yeah, and he was like,
how much did he weigh?
He was like 81 kilos, something like 80, yeah, 81. That's a lot.
So, yeah. So I think the literature is between 2-3% of an increase in body weight.
Yeah.
If for a good responder, and that's incredible.
Yeah.
Do you think, let's say I come to you and I just say, listen, Frank, I want to build muscle ASAP.
Yeah.
And you know as well as I, it can take years to build lean tissue over time. How do you have that conversation with someone?
So let's say we're going to look at hypertrophy. So the myofibrillar hypertrophy or second plasmic hypertrophy. The first thing I would do is like, where can I make the most progress? Mm-hmm. Like, are you already really strong? Or are you really good at like the pump sessions? Like, where's the, like, let's say I get somebody who's extremely strong, I'm probably gonna make more progress in the cyclocrasmic approach. Mm-hmm. For example, but if I've got somebody who's like really good at supersets, trisets, drop sets, all the crazy stuff, but I'll look at his 1RM, I'm like, that's not that a lot. You could probably be a little bit stronger. I would probably start there personally. Because
is that because you're gonna increase buy-in from the individual? And they're getting like positive reinforcement of progression also.
Yeah.
It's because of what they're good at.
No, it's actually the opposite.
It's because what you're challenging them with.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, like if somebody's already really strong, like I'm not gonna make them very like a lot stronger in that first couple of months. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna train something where they're not that great at, they're gonna see insane progress.
Big result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's something I would look at first. And that's basically why I determine, okay, we're gonna start with this phase, or we're gonna start with that phase. Then that's one question. But then also is, what kind of look do you want? Like, do you want the dense look?
Yeah.
Or do you want more the 3D look? What's basically what you want? Because that's something in my mind that makes a big difference. Like, if you're training super heavy, like let's say you're only gonna do like the Dorian Yates style, like high intensity, super heavy, I think personally you're gonna get more myofibrillar hypertrophy when he's trained that way.
Yeah.
But if you take a guy like Andrew Dew, he's also from the UK. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at how he trains, like a lot of supersets, a lot of drop sets, like rest pause sets, stuff like that. He isn't that strong, but he has massive muscles.
That makes sense when you look at what's actually happening within the cell. During myofibrillar hypertrophy, the cells are becoming more dense, right?
Yeah.
So it's no wonder. We could do this all night. I'm going to ask you one last question, and we'll definitely do this again, because I think it's important to be able to have even just to flesh this out with you. You know, we've both been doing this God knows how long, and every time you have a conversation like this with someone who has the level of knowledge that you have on a subject like this, it all and there's a lot of clarity there that we know ourselves, but sometimes we're just not doing, and people listening to this hopefully will be able to see that. I want you to summarize, if someone skimmed the 55 minutes that we've 56, 57 minutes, and you want to summarize this whole podcast, if they fell asleep, in 5 points for them to build muscle, 5 rules, what would you say, so that they can take even just these 5 away from this episode and go, if I at least implement one of those things, I'm going to get a result.
Okay, so 5 things. So you're going to build muscle easier in a positive energy balance. Like, that's probably fact number one that I should talk about.
Right.
Then you should aim to get at least 1.8 grams of protein, but high quality protein. So think about it as the pro foods like chicken, eggs, dairy, like whey protein, like those should be in there.
Per lean body mass or body mass in general?
I will do body mass in general. Like, people don't need to be
that easier too, right?
Yeah. And just think about it. Like, you're not going to build muscle in 6 months. Right. Like, I've been training for 15 plus years. Almost 17 years already. Like, it takes a long time to build muscle. I'm not even that massive yet. If I'm next to, like, pro athletes, I feel skinny. So, So that's like, number three, recovery is more important than working out.
Yes.
Like, you need to sleep more. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to grow, sleep is super important. Then if you train, like, you either have two options. Train super heavy and get stronger. Mm-hmm. The minimum reps, I would say, is the minimum you want to go with, like, three. Mm-hmm. Like between 3 and 30 is, like, optimal for hypertrophy. So in that range, just get super strong. But if you don't do that, like, super heavy lifting, make sure you get at least 1 or 2 reps shy of failure.
Yeah.
So doesn't matter how many reps you do, just get 1 or 2 reps shy of failure. That's super important if you want to build muscle.
Awesome.
Number five.
The killer.
There are not many supplements that actually are proven to help with muscle building. I think creatine is the only one.
Dude, I could not agree more with that. There, of course, are, you know, non-responders to everything.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, and it's the most researched supplement on the planet, right?
Yeah. The only thing I would say is, like, if you get your stomach gets upset from creatine, make sure you get the micronized version, because I had a lot of people in my coaching that say, oh, I get so gassed and stuff and problems like that. Just take
micronized monohydrate, right?
Yeah. And you don't have any of those problems.
Yeah. Dude, this has been an absolute pleasure. We need to do this again, 100%. Obviously, we're really good friends, but we don't have this conversation enough. So I would absolutely love this. Maybe
next month I'm here in Dubai.
Of course. So. Yeah, we'll do one. We'll do one in person. One in person. Awesome. Where can people find out more about you?
Just go to Instagram. Just my name in lowercase is Frank and Blunken on Instagram, and you can find more about it.
Awesome. I'll put all your links below. Dude, thank you so much for an incredible discussion. I'll speak to you soon.
Peace. See you soon.
Time is our most valuable commodity. I do not take it lightly that you've decided to spend it with us. It is something that I put highest on my list of priorities. Every single episode, I try and make sure that I can give you a return on investment of your time. If I haven't thus far, there are a number of ways that we can help you become the cover model of your life. Firstly, some downloads or our free courses. There are three that have stood the test of time. For those of you who want to lose a little bit of body fat and perform better, you can get our Cover Model Ab Guide at covermodelabguide.com. For those of you who want to add a little bit of tissue, a little bit of muscle tissue, and step into that dominant figure in the boardroom, you can go to covermodelhypertrophy.com. And for those of you who want to perform better, get a little bit of an edge with some supplementation that's going to help you perform better in the gym, in your career, in the bedroom, you can download our supplement protocol at covermodelsupplementprotocol.com. They're all absolutely free. Furthermore, if you're looking to connect with like-minded individuals, entrepreneurs just like yourself, you can join our community at covermodelcommunity.com. Lastly, and definitely not least, you can jump on a free consultation call with myself, Wade, or the team to see how we can help you, either on the call or over the next 6, 9, 12 months of your life, helping you to step into that man, that person, that human, that father, that leader that you know that you were born to be. You can do that by jumping on a free call at covermodelconsultation.com. Whatever you guys are doing, I know that you're going to dominate. I know that you were born to dominate. I know you're here to dominate. And I know that that is your life mission. That is your life goal, to provide, to look after, to support those loved ones around you. It's all I've ever dreamt of doing for myself, my future family, and I will do whatever I can to help you to do the same. As always, make the most of today. You will not get this day again. Peace.